Hello, this is Dylan West with your host, Dr. Joel Wallach. For over 30 years, Dr. Wallach's been helping people like you feel great. And that's what this is all about, helping everyone feel great and showing you how to get the most out of life by giving you control over your health. Besides his daily radio broadcast, Dr. Wallach performs each year over 300 lectures to tens of thousands of spellbound people in towns all across America. This recording is an example of one such lecture in New York City to an audience of several hundred doctors. His message was a challenge to the medical profession to wake up to alternative ways to get well, be well, and stay well, and helping people live to the fullest extent of their life's expectancy.
How many of you grew up on a farm or still work a farm or have anything to do with livestock? Well, I'll tell you what, you're my kind of people, because I grew up on a farm in West St. Louis County back in the 50s. We started out with beef calves, and if you raise livestock, the only way you can make money is if you raise a lot of your own feed, for those of you who don't have that experience. And so we raised our own corn, and we raised our own soybeans and our own hay, and we had a truck come out from the mill, and this truck would come out from the mill, and it would grind up the corn and the soybeans and the hay, and then we would add sacks of vitamins, minerals, trace minerals, and we'd make pellets out of it, and this is what we would feed the calves. And in 6 months' time, we'd ship them to market to be slaughtered, or we'd save back some of the best ones for ourselves, and we'd knock them in the head and eat them, put it bluntly. It always fascinated me as a teenager that we did that for those calves, and in 6 months, ship them off to be slaughtered, or we'd eat them. And we wanted to live to be 100 years of age without any aches and pains, and guess what? We didn't take any vitamins or minerals, and that bothered me. So I asked my dad, I'd say, hey, Pops, how come you do that for those calves, you don't do that for us? And he'd give me this good old Missouri farm wisdom. He'd say things like, shut up, boy. And of course, I was very quiet then because I didn't want to miss out on any meals. Well, then when I went to school, I went to the University of Missouri School of Agriculture, and I got my degree in agriculture. I got my major in animal husbandry and nutrition. My minor was in field crops and soils. And then I got into veterinary school. As a freshman veterinary student, I learned the answer to my question. The reason why we put these vitamins and minerals and trace minerals into animal feeds is because we don't have insurance for them. We don't have Blue Cross, Blue Shield, major medical hospitalization, Medicare and Medicaid. And if we were to use a human healthcare type of system for animals, it'd be sticker shock for you. Your hamburger would cost you $275 a pound. A dozen eggs would be $50. Boneless, skinless chicken breast would be $450 a pound just to pay for the health care. So we learned that we could keep the price of animal products down to where the average American could afford them simply by reducing or eliminating health care by preventing and curing diseases in animals with nutrition. It's that simple. And after graduating vet school, I went to Africa for 2 years and got to work with Marlon Perkins from the old Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom days and was one of his veterinarians. And got to play Frank Buck, used a tranquilizer gun, trampled all over Central and South Africa, and it was quite a kick for a young guy right out of school. You know, everybody wants to know if you want to be a large animal vet or a small animal vet. Well, I was an extra large animal vet because I was working with elephants and rhino and whatnot. And after 2 years, Marlon invited me back to the States to work on a big multi-million dollar project. He'd gotten a $7.5 million grant from the National Institutes of Health to study ecology, the environment, and pollution back in the early 60s when we were first learning about the Adele Davis thing, and pollution was going to be a danger, but nobody quite knew all the parameters. My job as a wildlife veterinarian on the project was to do autopsies of animals that died of natural causes in the big zoos around the United States. And this included the St. Louis Zoo, of course, with Perkins, the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, the Bronx Zoo in New York, the National Zoo in D.C., the L.A. Zoo, and many other big zoos around the United States. And I was supposed to identify a species of animals that was ultra-sensitive to pollution, and we're going to use this animal or species much like the old coal miners used to use canaries. Remember how that story goes? You take the canary down in the mine, and if methane gas or carbon monoxide leaks into the mine, the canary is more sensitive than the men and drop off the perch and die long before the men are in danger of suffocating or being blown up. Well, to make a long story short, after some 12 years working on the project, I had done autopsies on animals plus human beings for a comparison. What I learned was just very fascinating to me. It took me back to my nutrition days. What I learned was that every animal and human being who dies of natural causes dies of a nutritional deficiency disease. And I wrote 75 scientific papers on the subject. I wrote chapters for 8 multi-author textbooks, wrote one of my own, it was 1,000 pages, and 2,000 illustrations, and as Dr. Shacker said, was on 2020 with Hugh Downs and Geraldo before he got his nose broke for the first time, and was in 1,700 newspapers. But back in the 60s, nobody was interested in nutrition. We had lots of competition. We just put men on the moon. We had a high-tech Cold War going on with the Soviets. We had just declared war on cancer and had committed $23 billion to finding cures and vaccines. And people would say to me, Wallach, this is America. We've got the most food and the best quality of food in the world. How can you talk about nutritional deficiencies in America? And of course, they were thinking in terms of calories and protein. And I was thinking in terms of vitamin deficiencies and mineral and trace mineral and rare earth deficiencies. And so I got frustrated enough. I went back to school for 4 years up in Portland, Oregon, became a naturopathic physician, which in Portland, Oregon is a primary care physician. We're licensed. We can get a DEA number and prescribe. We deliver babies, do surgery, death certificates. Gosh, I saw lots of people for hemorrhoids and, you know, the basic things of life. You get a great political view of the world doing hemorrhoids. And this is a political year, so you see lots of them. But at any rate, the thing that I was always very honest, I put my veterinary degree on the wall next to the naturopathic degree, and new patients would come in, they'd spot that veterinary degree first because I think it was larger, and they'd say, Doc, am I in the right place? I'm here for a physical. It looks like you're a vet. And I said, well, I promise not to give you a rabies shot if you don't deserve it. And if I saw on their intake survey that they were from the farm, I used to keep one of these full-length obstetrical gloves in my drawer that, you know, I used to examine mares and cows with, and I'd put that on, kind of wave it in front of their face. They knew exactly what that was, and they'd never turn their back on me. Many of them would panic, and they'd bolt out the door, and the nurses would have to go chase them down. But we had a lot of fun. And the patients taught me a lot of things, and I like to think that I gave them some useful information. And my patients used to get a lot of patients for me because they say, you know, you got to go see this Doc Wallach. He treats you like a dog, but you get better. If you take home just 10% of what I share with you today, you're going to save yourselves an enormous amount of unnecessary misery. You will save yourselves a gob of money, and you will add many, many fruitful years to your life if you just take home 10%. But there's no extra charge if you want to take home 50% or 100%. It won't bother me a bit. In fact, I'll be quite happy if you do. Let's start out by sharing with you that the human being has the genetic potential, the genetic capacity to live healthily to be 120. Now, I'm going to prove that to you in just a second or two. But first, I have to share with you that Americans do an abysmal job. We're very, very bad when it comes to longevity. Our average lifespan is 75.5, about half of what we're genetically capable of. In 1990, the World Health Organization examined the top 32 industrialized nations in the world, and America ranked 17th in longevity. There was actually 16 other countries whose peoples live longer than we do. In 1995, they re-ran the study, and we ranked 20th. We dropped three slots. Now there's 19 countries whose peoples live longer than we do. We actually ranked 19th in healthfulness. That meant there were 18 other countries whose peoples live longer than we do before they develop heart disease and high blood pressure and cancer and arthritis and diabetes and so forth. We ranked 23rd when it came to first-year survivability and live births of our babies, and we ranked dead last, 32nd, when it came to preventing birth defects. What all these statistics mean is that we have the highest-priced healthcare system in the world, but not the best. And that's why you're here. If you were perfectly satisfied with the healthcare system, you wouldn't be here. You'd be home doing something else. You wouldn't need to be concerned about it. Well, everybody has a ritual that they go through every day to add healthful years to their life and maybe some longevity. It's something that grandma passed down to you. You have a herb you believe in, juice. You might be a vegetarian or a vegan or wear Birkenstocks or whatever it is that you do to add health and longevity to yourself. And let's just look at the top three and see if there's any proof in the pudding that they have any value for health or longevity. The first one I want to discuss is the Paleolithic lifestyle. This is where you're supposed to live like a cave person. I'm going to be very politically correct so I don't create problems here. You want to live like a cave person. You want to eat everything raw, raw vegetables, raw meat, you know, and you have to run around unshaven and Birkenstocks, and you have to use your bare hands to choke everything to death because you can't use a gun or a bone arrow. It's inhumane. Let's see if there's any proof in the pudding that this has any health or longevity benefit. The only hard evidence we have here is old Otzi. His mummified corpse was found in the Otzfell Valley of the Italian Alps when a glacier melted and receded farther than it had any time in recorded history. And they knew that he was in his prime of life when he died, between 25 and 40 years of age. They knew he was from the Copper Age because all of his tools and weapons that were found on his person were pure copper. That's between 4 and 6,000 years ago. And they carbon dated his tissues. They knew he died 5,000 300 years ago. But the part of the little study that fascinated me was they did a series of x-rays and CAT scans and MRIs on his mummified corpse to see if he had any of the diseases that afflict modern man, things like cancer and tuberculosis and syphilis. What they found out was very shocking. He had degenerative arthritis of the cervical vertebrae of the neck, the lumbar vertebrae of the lower back, and of both hips. Even more shocking, he had hardening of the arteries. He had arteriosclerosis, and despite his Spartan life, he had coronary artery disease. He had hardening of the arteries of the aorta, pulmonary artery, and of both iliac arteries. And he did not eat 3 eggs for breakfast every morning. He didn't eat any Big Macs. He didn't eat any Iowa corn-fed beef, and yet he has the diseases which are blamed on those lifestyles. So there is no longevity or health benefit that you can prove for the Paleolithic lifestyle. Then there's the body, mind, spirit thing, which has the meditation and yoga involved in it. And of course, that was brought to America by the hippies during the 60s and 70s, kind of died out for a while, and then Deepak Chopra revived it, you know, his best-selling books, 4 or 5 of them. He may be here, I don't know. But there is no proof in the pudding that it has any longevity benefit. Calms you down during tax season, which is now, you know, to meditate and do yoga, maybe during finals week. But longevity, I don't think so. Doesn't have any proof. And here's an example. Rita Guerra, 55, the premier meditation and yoga instructor in the Western Hemisphere. She was a vegan, didn't supplement with any vitamins and minerals. She believed she was too spiritually elevated for those earthly things. And she died at age 55. So there is no proof in the pudding that the body, mind, spirit thing has any longevity benefit. The one that all the medical personnel are jumping into in the last couple of years is the Mediterranean diet. This is where you're supposed to give up red meat, eat lots of poultry and fish, grains in the form of pastas and breads, and lots of vegetables, fruit, a little wine is okay. But there is no proof in the pudding that the Mediterranean diet has any health or longevity benefit, because the Greeks and the Italians, who eat the most of it, live to be 75.5 just like us. Now here's a specific example. Pope John Paul II. Now, if anybody on earth would be getting the very best that the Mediterranean diet would offer, it'd be the Pope, right? Now, he's been in Italy for 17 years, and unless he's been sneaking in Polish sausage under the table, he's been getting the very best that the Mediterranean diet has to offer. Had to have both his hips replaced a couple of years ago. Has failing health, has to cancel half of his speaking engagements and his administrative duties. He's 76 years old, half of what we're genetically capable of, and certainly doesn't show the benefits of a Mediterranean diet. Now, how old can you live to be in reality? Let's have a sharp look here. These are all documented by a gerontologist. Christian Mortensen here in August of 1995 turned 113. He still plays golf once a week. He's from San Rafael, California. Looks like he's in his 80s. Looks pretty sharp for a guy, 113. Then in July of 1995, a month earlier, this gal here, Dora Ramothebe from South Africa, turned 114. And when the media ran to her and said, "Dora, what do you attribute your health and longevity to?" she did not say, "I owe it to my HMO. She didn't say, "I never failed to get my annual physical." Here's what she said. She eats locusts every day, grasshoppers, pumpkin seeds, tortoise meat, not a vegetarian, wild herbs, dried fruit, and starts each morning with a cup of coffee. Well, so we're beginning to connect the dots here and put together some information on what it takes to live to be over 100. Don't raid the bait shops and get crickets. They won't work. You have to use locusts. This gal here, Margaret Skeets, according to the Guinness World Book of Records in 1994, was the oldest living American who was documented. I guarantee you there were many Americans who were older than she. They just live out in the swamps and the hills and are out there spitting tobacco and whittling and don't know it's, you know, necessary to get documented. She died at age 115. Looks pretty good for 115. A lot better than the 25-year-olds who subsist on Pepsis and ding-dongs and things like that. She died of a nutritional deficiency disease. She fell over and fractured her hip, which is unfortunately not too unusual. 75% of all Americans over the age of 65 who fracture a hip, major leg bone, pelvis, or vertebrae don't live 90 days. They die of complications. They die of pneumonia, stroke, pulmonary embolisms, and diseases of that nature. I want you to think back to 6 months ago. Ava Gabor, 74 years old, a year and a half before the average for the American, fell over and fractured her hip, osteoporosis. 4 days later, she was dead from pneumonia. And I guarantee you she had the very best estrogen patch that could be prescribed. Maybe 7 of them, knowing the Gabor sisters. She still died despite heroic levels of antibiotics of pneumonia, a complication of this hip fracture, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. This gal here, Jean Calment, February 21st, 1995, according to the Guinness World Book of Records, was the oldest living human being from France, turned 120. February 21st, 1996, she turned 121. She was still riding her bike until she was 105, volunteered as a librarian in the Paris Library. When they put her into the nursing home at age 120, they made her stop smoking. She'd been smoking for 105 years. They made her stop smoking because they were afraid it was going to shorten her life. I would think that the nicotine withdrawals would be worse than you let her smoke for a couple more weeks, right? This gal here, Susie Brunson, according to her family, was the oldest living American in 1994, died at age 123, and they based that claim on her birth date, December 25th, 1870, which was recorded in the family Bible. This fellow here, Francisco Barrasnueva Chaparina, from a little town of Mahiguel in Colombia, just outside of Bogota, turned 125. He's still living. This is a birthday announcement, not an obituary. And when asked by the media, what do you attribute your health and longevity to? He said, well, I owe it all to drinking a gallon of goat's milk every day. Now, the interesting thing about this story is 40 years ago, his physicians told him he only had 3 months to live. His sons built him a coffin. Every morning, he's been getting up and sitting by that coffin all day waiting to die. Nighttime comes, he goes to bed, wakes up in the morning. You know, hasn't had 30 seconds worth of exercise in the last 40 years. All the physicians who told him he only had 3 months to live all died. Now, he's still fathering children at age 125, and I don't know... I don't know how he catches them at that age, but once he does, the memory still tells him what to do. This guy here, Bauer, a chief of the third world country of Niger in Africa, died at age 126, and one of his wives was eulogizing him at his funeral, and she said he was still in possession of all his own teeth when he died at age 126. He did not have osteoporosis of the facial bones and jaw bones. This fellow here, Hamoudi El Abdullah from Syria, 2.5 years ago, died at age 133. He was in the Guinness World Book of Records not because of his age, as you'll see in a minute, and not because he remarried for the fourth time when he was 80. All you got to do is go to Vegas, sit in front of those little chapels, and you see that happening all the time. But after the age of 80, with the same wife, he fathered 9 children, 4 boys and 5 girls with the same wife, documented by the Guinness World Book of Records, over age 100, still fathering children. This gal here from Iran, Mazumi Dusti, according to the Iranian news agency, died at age 161. And this was a year ago in the Rocky Mountain News out of Denver. I guess it's either a Reuters or Associated Press news release. And the interesting thing about her obituary to me was that she was survived by 6 living children ranging in age from 120 to 128. They hadn't even left home to go to college yet. Now, her oldest son, Golam, said his mother had never visited a doctor or took any chemical medications or drugs, did take a few herbs during her life. So again, we're beginning to connect the dots here and get this picture of what it takes to live to be a ripe old age and meet your genetic potential. Now, this fellow here was one of my heroes, maybe my biggest hero in the alternative health field for many, many years. Old Linus, let's give him a hand. And, of course, he was famous for a variety of reasons. One is he was one of 2 people to ever get 2 Nobel Prizes. I mean, nobody could argue with the genius of this guy. Maybe one of the more intelligent men.
He got 2 Nobel Prizes by himself.
Yes, by himself. That's correct. They weren't shared with anybody. There's a fan. Okay. Maybe he was the most intelligent person of all time. Who knows? Also, he was famous for his interest in vitamin C. He was trained in classical biochemistry and nutrition in medical schools and universities associated with medical schools. So he believed you could get all your vitamins and minerals and trace minerals and amino acids and fatty acids from your 4 food groups. But he believed because of the stresses of modern day life and all the pollution that was in the air, water, and food that you needed large doses of vitamin C to kind of make it through this sea of chemicals. And he personally took 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day for 35 years. Never missed a lick. Sometimes more, never less than 10,000 milligrams, sometimes 18,000 milligrams a day. And he still died 7 years short of the magic number of 100, died at age 93 from widely disseminated prostate cancer. So we have some lessons to learn here. I've read all of his materials. I've read his scientific articles, his hundreds of popular articles and magazines, and probably an additional 400 scientific articles on vitamin C. And here's what I can guarantee you about vitamin C alone, okay, if you just take that one vitamin. If you faithfully take 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day for 35 years, like Linus Pauling did, and you're a woman, I will guarantee you, you will not get prostate cancer. Okay, the last thing on this longevity, and I think you'll have the picture by now. Remember that Biosphere 2, the Earth being Biosphere 1, that big dome in Tucson, Arizona, where 4 men, 4 women lived in there for 2 years, and they lived in a pollution-free environment. They recycled everything. They grew organically grown food, took in large doses of vitamins and minerals, and they had moderate calorie levels, had exercise schedules. And when they came out after 2 years, medical doctors from UCLA medical schools did physical exams on them, took all the lab work, put all this data into the medical computers at UCLA. And what the computer projected was that they could live to be 165 if they continued to do outside the dome what they had done inside the dome. So there's absolutely no doubt that the human being has the genetic capacity to live to be 120. Right now, there's 54,000 living Americans who are over age 105 in the United States. By the year 2050, there's supposed to be 1.5 million over the age of 105. So the only real question you have is, what can you do, what can you consciously do to get there from here? Because just doing the four food groups for the last 200 years has gotten us 75.5. So we know from this long-term empirical experiment that it doesn't work if you just try to get everything you need from your four food groups. Well, there's basically two concepts you only have to be concerned with. Concept number one, I refer to as avoid stepping on the landmines. Don't kill yourself wastefully. Don't throw away your life. You don't want to smoke. You don't want to abuse alcohol. You don't want to do drugs. You don't want to jog down the highway at 2 o'clock in the morning wearing an all-black ninja suit. You're going to get hit by a truck mirror. You don't want to jump off in Niagara Falls like this one guy did 6 months ago with a jet engine tied to his back, wanting to set the speed record for crossing Niagara Falls, but he forgot the lift part of the equation, didn't have wings on, so when he jumped off the edge of the falls, he accelerated to 600 miles an hour, but he was directed vertically downward. Now, who is it that they kill? Basically, you're looking at physicians. Let's look at physicians here. This is the last thing. If at all possible, you want to avoid going to a physician, because given half a chance, they will kill you. Okay. It may sound flippant because a lot of my good friends, in fact, my wife is a surgeon, so I have to watch what I say because you know what they can do when you're asleep, so you have to be very careful. So I have to be very factual here. Ralph Nader in 1993 said that 300,000 Americans are killed each year in hospitals alone as a result of medical negligence. 300,000 just in hospitals alone. And to appreciate how big a figure that is, compare that with 10 years of military losses in Vietnam, where we had 56,000 military personnel killed on a field of battle with guns and bayonets and artillery for an average of 5,600 a year. And for those 5,600 a year military personnel in Vietnam, millions of people protested. They poured out into the streets and protested. We had political anarchy the last 3 years of that 10-year war. There's still people in their hearts and minds fighting that war, or protesting that war, even though it was long over with. We chased a president out of the presidency for 5,600 military personnel a year. We shot, God forgive us, we shot and killed American students in Kent State, Ohio, demonstrating against the war for 5,600 military personnel. Now comes Ralph Nader, not Joel Wallach, who says, here's one profession or trade who kills 300,000 Americans each and every year, and you can't even find a crazy street preacher out here in any corner protesting it. Okay, who is it that they kill? Is it just the homeless? They go out there on cold days like this because they're all concentrated around the heat vents and under the bridges and it's good hunting, you know, and they put them in the VW vans and take them to the teaching hospitals and practice on them? No, it's not that simple. How many of you guys here remember Betsy Lehman? Anybody remember Betsy Lehman? Okay, just a couple. Well, I'll remind the rest of you. Maybe out of 500 people, there's two people remember her. She was the Pulitzer Prize-winning medical reporter for the Boston Globe, the second largest newspaper in America, had breast cancer. And she sat down and looked at the safety records of all the cancer treatment centers in the world. She looked at the success rate. She looked at who was on the cutting edge of new treatments for breast cancer. And she chose the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. And she went there and they promptly killed her with a 16 times overdose of chemotherapy. Betsy Lehman. Now, because she was a famous Pulitzer Prize winning reporter, she was written up in every front page of the newspapers around America. But there were 299,999 other Americans killed, you know, kind of the same way. I accept full responsibility for this. I want to absolve Fame, Ed, and everybody else involved here and for this. This is my thing, and if anybody gets sued or shot at, it'll be me. Remember this gal here? Yes, Jackie Kennedy Onassis. This picture was taken of her 3 days before she entered a private treatment center here in New York for her first and last chemotherapy treatment. She was diagnosed 6 months before her death with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a type of cancer that normally takes 10, 12, 15 years to kill you. It's relatively painless compared to, say, pancreatic or stomach or liver cancer. And she does not look like a terminal cancer patient to me. She was taking a stroll around Central Park with a friend on a brisk day, kind of like today. She went in that Friday night for her first and last chemotherapy treatment. There was no death watch on her because she had 10, 12, 15 years to go. I mean, they waited 6 months for her first treatment, my goodness, because there was no hurry. She goes in on Friday night. Tuesday, she was dead, and you're supposed to believe that Jackie Kennedy died of cancer. As sure as God made little green apples, Jackie Kennedy did not die of cancer. She died of an overdose of chemo, just like Betsy Lehman. And if they can kill a Jackie Kennedy and they can kill a Betsy Lehman and not a single doctor lost his license, there was no clinic shut down or closed down, what chance does the average person on the street have? You have three chances. None, none, and none. It's kind of like Vegas. Okay, here's one more. I got to show you this one. This is also from Ralph Nader. This was July of 1994. This was on the front page of every newspaper in America. I just happened to choose the USA Today because I'm a kid at heart still and like colored pictures. So this is from the USA Today. I think it was July 27th, 1994. What he did was look at doctors who treat Medicare patients. He said, 70% of the doctors who treat Medicare patients flunk the exam on how to do it safely and effectively. 70%. What would happen to American Airlines if 70% of their pilots flunked the exam on how to fly? What would happen to American Airlines if they killed 300,000 passengers a year? Right, they'd be closed down in a millisecond. You'd start using trains and cars, wouldn't you, and motor scooters. Well, by contrast, these numbers who are damaged and killed and injured in the medical profession are kind of hidden. If doctors were to line up terminal cancer patients and diabetic patients and AIDS patients along a wall and take a machine gun and mow them down, you know, there'd be all these groups and class action suits and Senate investigations on this terrible behavior. But it's more subtle than that, and here's what Ralph Nader said. Here's one example of the many. 32,000 hip fractures each year in America are attributed to prescribing by medical doctors. It leaves the elderly sedated and unbalanced. These people fall over and fracture a hip. It's a death sentence for 29,000 of them. Remember, 75% over the age of 65 don't live 90 days. They'd have complications. And I believe that physicians should be held responsible for that, just the way the bartenders are when they send people home who have drunk too much and allow them to kill somebody else or themselves. One more here on allopathic physicians, and we'll move on to the positive stuff, which is concept number two. Harvard Medical School did a great survey in 1972. This was published in every medical journal in the world, including JAMA and New England Journal of Medicine and so forth. What they did was look at the illegal use of psychotropic drugs by medical doctors themselves. This included street drugs, it included prescription drugs, it included cocaine, marijuana, speed, fentanyl, barbiturates, opium derivatives. What they found out was pretty scary. They said that 52% of licensed medical doctors in America use psychotropic drugs by themselves, on themselves, weekly. What that means is if you still choose to go to an allopathic doctor after this presentation, don't be too excited about their degrees and licenses and certificates hanging on the wall. What you want to very carefully do is look at the pupils of their eyes to see if they're gorked out on something before you let them examine you, treat you, or do some kind of prescription. Then, of course, even scarier yet, 78% of the medical students use psychotropic drugs on themselves each week illegally. And do you think they quit when they graduate school? No, they get the good stuff because now they can afford it. Okay, here's an example. I have thousands of these. I just brought some of the better ones. I've got to tell you this one real quickly. This guy was a 35-year-old anesthesiologist for Stanford Medical School at the University of California in San Jose. And he was supposed to be in the surgery room getting ready to do a liver transplant anesthesia, right? They couldn't find him. They're all gowned up. Here comes the liver and the cooler, and where's this guy to anesthetize the recipient? Couldn't find him. So they call home. No, his wife said he left 2 hours earlier. They start beeping him on his pager. Couldn't find him. And one of the security guards is running down the hall, and he hears this pager coming from the bathroom. The door is locked. Couldn't get any answer banging on the door, so he broke the door down, and here's this anesthesiologist dead on the floor with a shoe off, and he had given himself an overdose in the foot of fentanyl. Literally shot himself in the foot. Even worse than the fact that he killed himself and overdosed was the fact that he was going to do the anesthesiology on this liver transplant recipient under the influence of that drug. How many people had been injured and so forth during his... He was a professor of anesthesiology at Stanford. Dr. Michael Potler, 30 years old, just out of his residency 3 or 4 years. You knew we were in trouble to begin with because he had Birkenstocks on in this picture. He killed himself with an overdose of recreational drugs, gave himself an IV and killed himself. And because he was a medical doctor, on the front page of the San Diego newspaper, they eulogized him. He saved the lives of children but lost his own. And in the article it said he devoted his whole life to caring for children. Well, unless he was a babysitter or a pedophile, that can't be true because he was only out of school 3 years. Also, he was a thief because the drugs he killed himself with, he stole from the hospital pharmacy. Also, he was malignant dumb. That's the only way I can describe him. He was malignant dumb because even after 14 years of medical school, couldn't read a syringe right and killed himself with an overdose. These high school dropouts who can't read or write don't do that, and they live in cardboard boxes for years and years and years. So would you want him working on your kids? I don't think so. He was a pediatrician. What did the pupils look like on the eyes of this surgeon in Grand Rapids, Michigan? Took off the normal breast, left the cancerous one on. Willie King, He went in to get his right leg amputated because he had gangrene and diabetes, and the surgeon promptly cut off his normal left leg. This surgeon here, a neurosurgeon from Wilmington, North Carolina, left the surgery room for 25 minutes, let the patient's brain dry out, and they suspended his license for 30 days because they said he went into the lunchroom and had to eat something for 25 minutes. I don't believe that's true. I believe he is one of those guys who are 52% who are doing drugs, you know, was going through withdrawals and had to go snort some cocaine or give himself a shot. And I base that opinion on this. It said, the state medical board also said that Dr. Raymond Sattler forgot the names of surgical instruments during the operation, told his nurse to drill holes in the patient's head with a Black & Decker drill. It was kind of like Sears Home Repair Week. These are too good to pass up. This chest surgeon from Fort Worth, Texas, Osteopathic Medical Center of Texas, obviously an allopathic osteopath. And anyway, he took out the normal right lung and left the cancerous left lung in, didn't tell anybody, sewed the guy up. 2 years later, he dies, and the pathologist said, hey, there's something wrong here. The surgical records don't match up with the pathology. He settles for $9 million because he couldn't get another doctor to testify that he was sober during the surgery. And if he'd have gone in to the jury, they would have given an award to the survivors of $100 million. Lastly, on concept number one, the very last one, you like to think that doctors will learn the difference between a dead patient and a live patient. That should be basic stuff, right? Death 101, life 101. But you're never quite sure when you see stuff like this. This gal here, 86 years old, Mildred C. Clark, was found cold, stiff, and blue on her nursing home apartment floor. The doctor said, hey, she's 86 years old. Let's let her slip away. Let's not make her miserable in the last few moments of her life and run up the bills for a survivor. So he sends her off to the hospital morgue in Albany, New York. But because they didn't have a death certificate, the house doctor and the residents and interns came down to examine her and declared her dead, wrote a death certificate, stripped her down, hosed her body down, put her in a body bag, and put her in a freezer for 90 minutes until the coroner and the pathologist got there to do the autopsy. 90 minutes later, they wheel her out of the freezer, zip open the body bag, and she sits up and says, thank God you found me. It was cold and dark in there, and I didn't know where I was. Now, she had to be a tough old bird. If you don't believe it, strip yourself down, hose yourself down, get into the freezer with the ice cream for 90 minutes and see how well you do. I think you get the picture why you should take control of your own health. Concept number two. These are the positive things that you can do to get to live to be over 120. Number one, you want to give your body all essential nutrients, the things that your body requires to maintain and repair itself. You cannot get it from your four food groups. And anybody who tells you that is giving you, I'm going to give you a scientific word here, caca. You know what caca is? Okay. Now, the media knows you're interested in health. And so you see everything in magazines and newspapers, television and radio. So don't wait for somebody to tell you this. I think most of you in this room are probably already doing it. If you do not, it was worth your coming here just for that piece. Now, my favorite disease, and it's my favorite disease because it illustrates what you can do for yourself. It illustrates what you can do for yourself. 75% of all Americans over the age of 50 get arthritis in one form or one degree or another. 35 million baby boomers are going to get arthritis in the next 7 to 10 years, and there's not a single medical treatment designed to fix it. Aspirin doesn't fix it, causes gastric bleeding and death. Tylenol doesn't fix it, causes 50,000 cases of kidney failure each year, including 5,000 of which are so severe you need a kidney transplant. Advil and ibuprofen don't fix it, and they cause liver cirrhosis in 2 to 5% of the users. Then you have methotrexate and gold shots. They don't fix it, and they suppress your bone marrow so you can't make normal platelets and white blood cells. And if a pregnant woman uses methotrexate during pregnancy for her arthritis, she has a 97% increase in risk of having a baby born with a neural tube defect, such as spina bifida and anencephaly and so forth. Then you have, of course, prednisone and cortisone. These things don't fix arthritis. They actually suppress your immune system so that you're left open to diseases far, far more horrible than arthritis, and they actually accelerate the loss of minerals from your bones. And when these over-the-counter prescription medications don't work anymore to relieve pain and inflammation, the only thing left for you medically is joint replacement surgery. You need new hips, new knees. Fuse those vertebrae together. Put plastic joints in your fingers and so forth. And as a physician, I never like to refer my patients in to get cut up like a side of beef. Now, Harvard Medical School has been laying in the bushes for me for 25 years. They said, finally, we're going to prove that Wallach is a quack, a hoax, and a fraud here because everybody knows you can't regrow cartilage and bone, and I would agree with them If the only raw materials you're using is aspirin and Tylenol and gold shots and prednisone and cortisone, you're not going to regrow collagen bone because those are not the raw materials to do it. The recipe is 5 ounces of calcium-enriched Minute Maid orange juice. Remember that little thing, calcium-enriched, not the country style, not the original, but calcium-enriched Minute Maid orange juice. You're getting free calcium. You don't have to buy a lot of pills. And don't say, can I use home-squeezed orange juice? Can I use apple juice? No, you have to, you know, you wouldn't take an award-winning angel food cake recipe that uses 12 chicken eggs and say, can I use it as 7 duck eggs? And okay. It's 5 ounces of calcium-enriched Minute Maid orange juice, a half ounce of gelatin, 1 ounce of liquid minerals, 1 ounce of a multiple. You add the 7.5 ounces together and you take it faithfully twice a day for 60 to 90 days, unless you have an absorption problem, which is a caveat there. Okay, repeat the recipe. Well, I'm looking here. The recipe goes like this. The recipe goes like this. 5 ounces of calcium-enriched Minute Maid orange juice, a half ounce of gelatin. Most women know that, you know, for the brittle fingernails and split ends on your... No! Vegetarians still have to use gelatin. Gelatin. Then 1 ounce of a liquid mineral. Take that faithfully twice a day for 60 to 90 days, and then call me in the morning. It helps memory, hearing, and vision. Okay, I'm rough. See, that's a veterinarian. I have to deal with Brahma bulls, elephants. There's three types of mineral supplementation. The oldest one, of course, has been around since time immemorial. These are elemental or metallic minerals. These are pills, capsules, tablets, limestone, oyster shell, clays of various types, seabed minerals. These elemental minerals are only available, and Tums, I love that one, Tums. I got to watch people approaching me because I've been attacked several times.
You have to empty the room.
Yeah.
And then, you've mentioned that your timetable's good.
Okay. I have, and so I had to fight my way out. And always it was the medical doctor's wife. It wasn't the medical doctor, it was his wife. Okay, 8 to 12% availability of pills, capsules, clays, and so forth. And when you hit 50, do you understand why people, when they hit the big 4-0, everybody kind of falls off the edge and their back goes, their teeth get loose, their hair gets gray, their blood pressure goes up, they start spilling sugar in their urine? That's because your ability to absorb elemental minerals drops precipitously. About 3 years ago in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a guy jumps up in the back of the room and says, "Hey, Wallach, now I know what I see in my porta potty business." "What do you see on your porta potty business, for goodness sake?" He says, "Well, every time we clean those things out and disinfect them to reuse them, we find vitamin pills that come through people." I said, "Come on now, how do you know they're vitamin pills?" He said, "Well, it's simple. They say Theragram M, one a day, Centrum, and Centrum Silver right on the coating." "Are there any chiropractors in here? Raise your hand." "Yeah. Do you ever do spinal x-rays and see pills coming through people?" "Yes, of course, all the time. You see them lined up like little boxcars. And so when you're on the pot and you hear clink, clink, plop, plop, it's not quarters coming through there, it's them little pills." Now, a lot of people say to me, "Doc, you know, I listen to your tapes, heard your lecture, hear you on the radio, and I take 2,000 milligrams of calcium every day. And I still have loose teeth, arthritis, osteoporosis, bone spurs, high blood pressure, foot cramps, leg cramps, insomnia, you know, everything you say is due to calcium deficiency. What kind do you take?" "Calcium lactate." "Well, there's a problem, because out of a 1,000 milligram calcium lactate tablet, 86% or 860 milligrams is lactose or milk sugar. Only 14%, 140 milligrams is a elemental calcium or metallic calcium. Let's take 10% usability, that's 14 milligrams. So if you take two of those tablets, 1,000 milligrams, you're not getting 2,000 milligrams. You get 2 times 14 or 28 milligrams. If you want to use calcium lactate or calcium carbonate or calcium citrate, you got to take 30 of those pills with each meal. 90 a day, that's almost a full 100-tablet bottle a day. That's even the cheapest one, $5 a bottle, it's 150 bucks a month. You still got 59 more minerals, 16 vitamins. You know, it gets pricey. In addition, you'll develop a disease that I refer to as BNF. BNF disease, it stands for belching and farting. You'll sound like an elephant out in the woods with a horrible belly disease. And you know you got it when your spouse has to throw a canary in the bathroom to see if it's safe to go in there. Now, during the 60s, the animal industry, the agricultural industry, came up with chelated minerals because no farmer's dumb enough to put a dollar's worth of minerals in an animal's mouth and have 99 cents come out in the manure. So we learned that by adding amino acids, proteins, and enzymes, which are proteins that do work, to the elemental mineral, it increases the absorbability to 40%. And the health food industry jumped on it and said, "Hey, that's good for people too." So if you look at multiples today, you see a mixture of metallic and chelated minerals. And the way it's supposed to be is our food plants, grains, fruits, vegetables, and nuts are supposed to take the elemental minerals out of the soil, convert them, and we eat the plants, and that's how we're supposed to get it, because we've exhausted our soils. 60 years ago, we knew this, and that's when we began to put vitamins and minerals and trace minerals in animal feeds. Unfortunately for humans, we got wonder drugs. We got, in 1936, we got sulfa drugs. 1938, we got penicillin. 1942, we got prednisone and cortisone. Okay, the reason why these people lived to be 120 in these cultures, the Tibetans, Hunzas, Russian Georgians, Azerbaijanis, Vilcabambas, and Titicacas, is because they irrigate. That's my favorite, the Titicacas. You know, I like the name. They're from the Andes in Peru. They irrigate with glacial milk. You boil away a quart of glacial milk, you get 2 inches of mineral in the bottom of that jug. Boil away a quart of Evian and Perrier, which I see rife around here, you get as much mineral as you can put on the head of a pin. Because they've irrigated with glacial milk for 2,500 to 5,000 years, their food plants are rich with minerals, and they don't have a single doctor.
Information and statements regarding dietary supplements discussed have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.